Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September 24th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Verse Agenda. We'll be right back with Bill right after this. Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September 24th. We have a lot to get into with Bill today. We'll be talking about President Trump and the NFL. That's an interesting battle because I actually think he's touching a nerve when he gets when he got into this fight with the NFL. I know, at least for myself, I think he's touching a nerve. President Trump was at the UN and he delivered an excellent speech. In fact, I think this has been a great week for President Trump. The GOP Senate, not such a good week for them, especially for Senator McCain, who suddenly decided that he's not going to vote for any repeal of Obamacare. I'm just a little bit disappointed with Senator McCain. Fabulous article in Time magazine about the Democrats. The Democrats in shambles. I mean, just totally in shambles. Great article. Angela Merkel was reelected today, from what we can tell. Bill had a great article about a lady named Margaret Court. I was not familiar with the lady or her story, and I think that we're going to enjoy that a great deal tonight from Bill. In North Korea, North Korea and rhetoric, I was listening to former UN ambassador Bill Richardson, this morning talking about how concerned he is with the rhetoric with North Korea. I'm just a little bit surprised to hear that, especially since he was one of the people who saved North Korea about 20 years ago. So we have a lot to get into with our friend Bill. How are you, Bill Katz? How's the weather in New York?
Just fine, Silvio, just fine. I've spent my day on my knee singing the Albanian national anthem. I knew the words. I happen to like it. And wasn't it remarkable that the nitwits over in London who were visiting London playing football? I forgot what team it was. I think they're going to be history soon. Went on their knee when the American national anthem play was played, but stood up for the British national anthem.
Expecting them to take a knee during the UK national anthem. With, I think it, I may be wrong, but I think it's God Save the Queen. I think that's what
that's
they
sang.
But I was kind of surprised that they didn't take a knee because, from my history, weren't the ships that brought the slaves run by British people?
But Britain was the leading colonial power in Africa.
Yes, exactly. So I would have thought that maybe these young men would have been a little bit more knowledgeable of their history, Bill, and would have gone the distance in expressing their discontent.
I'm sure they have deeply philosophical reasons for what they did. Now, I would be very interested to see how this plays out. It's a rather ugly episode. It really is. You know, it's like these teams that are refusing to accept an invitation to the White House. When you're invited to the White House, you're invited to honor the American presidency, to honor the American flag. You're not invited simply by the incumbent president. You know, that's not what an invitation to the White House is about. I'm sure most of the people who Trump invites to the White House or who visit the White House officially are not his fans. But that's part of but they show respect for the office. They show respect for the flag, for the country. And I think that they, in the end, this behavior is losing behavior. There will be plenty of people who will cheer on the players and plenty of people, and they will be in the news media, and plenty of people who will denounce Trump. But I think that most Americans believe that when you go to a football game, you're there to enjoy the game and that the patriotic ceremony before is for all Americans, no matter what their political beliefs. And the NFL has been losing support in terms of attendance and in terms of television viewing rather dramatically, and I don't think this is going to help.
No, I don't think so either. And, you know, President Trump really touched the nerve, I mentioned in the introduction, with people like me, because I've always been very offended by these players who do this. They're entitled to their point of view, but I think I would have a lot more respect for them if they did this on their own time and they actually got together and, you know, got together a bunch of money and bought maybe an hour of prime time on one of the networks to express why they're doing what they're doing. But to do it during the football game or before the football game, when in essence somebody else is paying for their time, either their salary or the advertisers, that doesn't show any strength to me. On the contrary, it shows that they're very weak. And then when you talk to these people and you ask them, you know, what are you protesting? Well, we're protesting racism. Well, if that's the case, if you're really concerned about the state of Black America, and you should be, the state of Black America is not good, then why didn't you do this when Obama was president? You know, the shootings in Chicago was pretty bad, too, when Obama was president.
Yes.
All these problems existed a few months ago when Obama was president. They never did it. And that's what makes me wonder just whether this is about racism or whether this is just about Trump, getting back at Trump, which is pretty stupid, Bill, because you're from New York and you've known Trump a heck of a lot longer than I have. But, I mean, I had a lot of concerns about Trump before the election, during the primaries, as you know. We discussed many of them here on our Sunday show. But none of those concerns were about Trump being a racist. I never thought that to me never crossed my mind that he was a racist. He was a lot of things, bad temper, but racism, and you know him better than I. You're from New York, and you've been there, while he's been in the limelight and so on. Racism, I don't think, was ever one of the problems that Trump had, Bill.
No, he has been a public figure for probably about 3 decades, maybe 4 decades in New York, and that's one issue that never came up. He has quite a good record, actually, of dealing with minorities. I mean, another outrage is when people say he's anti-Semitic. This man has more Jews around him than any president in American history, and he's more pro-Israel than any president in American history. And to call a man like that, and his daughter is an Orthodox Jew, and his son-in-law is an Orthodox Jew, and to call a man like that anti-Semitic is disgraceful. It demeans the term. It insults the term. And to call him a racist, I mean, he has African-American women as executives, and hired minorities long before it was popular. There's absolutely nothing in his record to suggest that's true. And yet the news media makes no attempt to correct it. Absolutely no attempt. Anything goes when it comes to Donald Trump.
Right. Well, and that's what it is. I think he became a racist when he was either nominated or when he became president. That's when he became a racist. But I find that's very troubling because, you know, immediately these players want to make this about race. Not about race. He wasn't talking about black players or white players. He was talking about players who took a knee before the game during the national anthem. And, Bill, I can only tell you this. I don't know of any other profession in the United States, certainly not when you worked in the New York Times and you in the newsroom, if a bunch of employees had decided to do a political demonstration within the newsroom, my guess is that they would have been called into the supervisor's office and told, don't do that again or you're going to be fired. I mean, the idea that you could do political protest at work is something that most Americans understand. You don't have to be a genius to figure this out. That's not something you do, Bill.
That's exactly right. And especially when you look at the fact that the NFL and the football teams are private organizations. The Constitution of the United States applies to all citizens on their own time. But when you work for a private organization, that organization has a right to establish reasonable rules. And I think banning political activity is a reasonable rule because you have all your own free time in which to engage in that activity. So when people say this is their right, it really isn't their right not to do it on company time. And also, what comes next? Let's say a group of football players decided to start a protest before the game because they thought there were too many black players in the NFL. What if they said, we have First Amendment rights and we're going to have a protest before the game calling for more balanced racial hiring in the NFL, which means more whites? Do you think anybody would support, well, any of these same
right.
people would support their First Amendment rights to do it? Of course not.
Right.
We always separate politics from employment, or at least we should. And I think that they're making fools of themselves. I don't think they're doing a bit of good for black children, black youngsters. As you said, they can do other things that are much more effective. There will be, of course, a certain number of people who will support this because there is an element in this country, and I'm sorry to say it's growing, that believes that politics should be in everything. You know, this is the old the personalist political racket that you hear a lot in feminism. But no, it's only political if you give people permission to make it political. And I think that I'd like to see how this plays out in terms of ratings and in terms of the popularity of the NFL. I can't believe that it will help the NFL. I can't believe all those left-wing Democrats will suddenly become professional football fans just to see the players take a knee. I think these are people who generally dislike sports, and especially football. And I think, again, it's for them, this is an issue of convenience. But I'd like to see how it plays out.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they do the ratings pretty quickly. And I know that I boycotted the NFL today. Now, the Cowboys are not playing today. They're going to play tomorrow night. But we have an owner, Jerry Jones, who's made it very clear that he's not putting up with this. And so no one's doing it in the Cowboys. I think that would be a huge mistake for anybody to challenge Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. But so I expect tomorrow night when the Cowboys play here in Dallas that there's going to be a big flag on the field, and it's going to be as patriotic as it ever gets.
I'd like to see.
Yeah, tune in. I think you'll see that. I think you'll see
and
that.
And that is
there's
when?
Always a big,
remind...
Well, it's tomorrow night. It's the Monday night game of the week, which is now on ESPN, not to promote them, but it used to be on ABC, and then they moved it to ESPN. So it's on ESPN. I guess it'll start at 7 or 8 o'clock local time. So it's either 8 your time or 9 your time. But it's the Monday night game of the week, and the Cowboys are playing. I forgot who they're playing. But Jerry Jones has made it very clear he's not tolerating this. He said it weeks ago, and nobody has challenged him. But for me, the issue is one of respect for the flag and respect for the veterans. And if you are angry at something, I just think there are better ways of doing it. I was thinking about something this afternoon, Bill, that, you know, I would suggest to the NFL Players Union, and 75%, I believe, of the players are now black. It's amazing how that's happened in a generation. What I would suggest that the NFL do is ask every player to get a scholarship for a young black kid in one of their markets and say, we're going to get you a scholarship so that you can go to a private school and you can enjoy a better high school than the one in the public school that you're stuck in. That,
yeah.
I think, would do more for blacks and for African Americans and their communities, and this silly thing about the knee bill.
I fully agree with you. You know, once again, we see something that's very disturbing in these demonstrations, and that is that the African American community has been convinced over the years by somebody that these symbolic victories are more important than real victories, and that's not true. I mean, there's not one of these things, these gimmicks, like going down on your knee in a football game, that has improved the life of one black child. Not one. And they, for some reason, they seem to be content with these things. Just as I was reading an article just yesterday, that the elite members of the African-American community are already considering which black candidates to favor for the presidency in 2020. And I thought, how silly. Why restrict yourself to black candidates? Why not say which candidate is best for our community? Not what the race of the candidate is. This is these symbolic victories remind me very much of the old Tammany Hall machine politicians in New York who would allow their constituents to make a little bit of progress, but not too much progress. Because if they made too much progress, Tammany Hall would be out of business, which eventually it was. And it reminds me of that, little symbolic victories. Every year they'd come along, machine politicians would, and give out a Thanksgiving Day turkey, but there was no real progress. And I think we're seeing a repeat of that now. And maybe the members of the black community will wake up and realize they're being used.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would love to hear the reaction from the left-wing media if a few people said, we're looking for the best white candidate for
yes.
our. I mean, there would be obviously, and that would be just as stupid, by the way, of saying what would be the best black candidate. They're both stupid because they're focusing on race, which should not be what we focus on. But I think President Trump hit a nerve when he said that about the players. Now, obviously, some people didn't like it. The media doesn't like it. A lot of them in the media don't like it. But I think out here in the country, Bill, I think he's touched the nerve. And this has legs, as they like to say, Bill. I think you'll see a lot of people reacting. I mean, they were interviewing some fans today on television, and I thought this couple in New York had the best answer. They were saying, here I am with my wife at a football game, and I have to answer questions about politics, and that's not why we come to the game.
That's exactly right. The mentality of the far left is a very grim, gray mentality. You very often see these leftists at meetings; they never smile. The weight of the world is on their shoulders. We are all so oppressed. Things are terrible. And that's their mentality. A couple of days ago, I thought it was very amusing that some reporter, and this doesn't happen too often in journalism today, some reporter challenged Elizabeth Warren about her wealth. I mean, she's a very rich lady, and she's talking about the 1% and how everybody else is being put down. And the reporter said, you're the 1%. And she just tried to change the subject. She just constantly tried to change the subject. The hypocrisy is flowing. It is flowing faster than ever. The attempt, of course, is to bring down Donald Trump. But I noticed today that there's a hockey team called the Penguins. I'm not familiar
right.
with hockey. That has accepted, just won the Stanley Cup, and has accepted the invitation to the White House, which is the right thing to do. You are invited to the
right.
White House as an honor by the president. You don't have to like that particular president.
Right. This team you're talking about is the NHL Pittsburgh Penguins, who won the Stanley Cup. They're a very good team. And they issued a statement saying, yes, we accept the invitation because this is a tradition. And, it doesn't mean anything political. It just means that, we will go to the White House as other teams have done before. And that's it. And that's all that it is. It's not supposed to be a political visit. It's just a tradition that the teams go there. But I think that's really smart that the Penguins did that, because that they distanced themselves from some of these silly NFL players. We'll see in a couple of days. We'll know about the ratings in a couple of days. But the ratings last week were not good. And now with this, we will see. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot, Bill. I really do.
Well,
I think they're shooting themselves in the foot, because the last thing you want to do in any business is upset your customer. I think I learned that a long time ago.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly right. And also, they should take a page from the life of Branch Rickey, who was the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he was the manager who brought Jackie Robinson up in 1947 and integrated baseball. He didn't do it out of the goodness of his heart, although I hope there was goodness in his heart. He did it because there was an increasing African-American population in Brooklyn where the Dodgers played, and he realized he had to show respect for them. And when you show respect for your constituency, you get results. Now, what's happening today is the NFL is not showing respect for its constituency, and I think the result, as you pointed out, will be catastrophic for them. I noticed today there was a statement involving NASCAR, and I don't recall who made the statement and what the official position was, but that NASCAR will not permit political statements to be made at its races, and that's good.
That's exactly right. And some teams today, by the way, the New York Jets as an example, went out of their way to stand up and salute the flag. So
yes.
Some teams are went out of the way. I know the Jets did it in the game in Kansas City. Both teams stood up there. So, I mean, I think that if I was the players' union, I would really deal with this very quickly. I should have dealt with it weeks ago. But I would have a private meeting with the players and say, look, guys, you're killing us with that. Because the problem in the economics of professional sports is very interesting because the owners have long-term commitments with many of these players, but the advertisers do not necessarily have long-term commitments with them. They can change their money if the ratings are not there. So, you know, you could be seeing some of these teams being hit in the pocketbook here very soon. Because television advertisers, they're not interested in what, you know, Johnny Smith thinks about the flag. They're interested in rating, period.
That's right.
So they're going to react negatively. Before we take a break, Bill, you mentioned the Dodgers for a second, and I just wanted to bring up the fact that it was on this day, September 24th, 1957, that the Brooklyn Dodgers played their last game in Ebbets Field. They moved to L.A. the following season. And I spent a little bit of time today reading about this. And what I find most amazing is that in 1957, and you probably know this, in 57, the Dodgers were the defending National League champs in their last season in Brooklyn. They won seven National League titles from 47 to 56. They were a very successful team. Do you remember any of that? You know, I know you're probably a young man, but do you remember any of that last game? At Ebbets Field?
I don't remember the last game. I think by that time, I do remember that there was so much anger over the fact that the Dodgers were leaving Brooklyn that people had turned their backs on them, not on the players, but on the team itself. And I think they were in effect they were as good as gone, because I remember I had just started college that year, I don't remember even expressing the slightest interest in the Dodgers, and I was a fanatical Brooklyn Dodgers fan. I think that the sense of betrayal was so strong that I think people just stopped being interested. You know, Pete Hamill, the writer, said that there were three villains in Brooklyn: Hitler, Stalin, and Walter O'Malley. Walter O'Malley being the owner of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Yes.
Right.
And there really was a sense of betrayal. There really was.
Right. Well, I thought it was very sad that in their last game at Ebbets Field, they drew 6,000 fans. So I think that confirms what you're saying, that a lot of fans had written them off or turned them off probably earlier. But that's a sad chapter, because that was a great story, baseball story, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and it ended on this day 60 years ago. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with Bill. We'll get into the UN and lots of other things from this week with President Trump. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's get back to our good friend Bill Katz. Bill, I bet you were kneeling while we were doing a little break here.
I heard the music, and I'm protesting the music.
Right, yeah. So you wanted to protest something here in the last 30 seconds, right? We're in a protest mood.
Yes, it's interesting that there have been a number of discussions recently about the politicization of everything. The late-night talk shows are impossible to watch because all they're becoming is political statements, and eventually I think they're going to just turn people off. I really do.
Well, the Emmys certainly did. I mean, the Emmys,
oh, God, yeah.
Last
they're the
week,
worst ratings in history.
Yeah, so eventually, I mean, I know there's a market for it. I mean, look at MSNBC every night. There's about 3 million people who watch them.
Yes.
And so there is, you know, there's 3 million people out there who want to hear every night that Donald Trump is horrible. So
well, there's
a market for it. But the problem is when you go into more of what we would like to call mainstream, like the NFL or the late night or the Emmys, there you're appealing to a broader market. And if you're shutting off half of the country, eventually the advertisers will notice, Bill. I keep coming back to the advertisers because that's who pays the bills and all of these
things.
That's
exactly right. Well, I think if you can, there are certain examples that are pretty obvious. One of them is Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood, the feature film industry is dying, and it's probably dead by now because it became completely politicized, and the Oscars became politicized. People were up there making political statements. By the way, many people forget this exact same thing was done to George W. Bush. I mean, he was illegitimate. He was not a real president and all this. I remember Roger Moore getting up at one of the Oscar ceremonies and lecturing Bush on what he should be doing in Iraq. So there's a history here. And the history, of course, always involves Republican presidents. I mean, nobody goes after Democratic presidents in these industries. They went after Reagan. He was going to blow up the world. He was a warmonger. He was a warmed-over movie actor. He was an amiable dunce. But Obama, absolutely nothing. No criticism, not one word. It's all about race, I'm afraid, and that's very sad because it divides the country racially, and it also makes it very hard for African Americans to make real progress. Because the people who were doing this convinced them that they can't make any progress. It's hard to convince somebody who's making $9 million a year that he's oppressed, but they've been able to do this. You know, forget your $9 million. You're oppressed. It's a very sad state of affairs. I hope that they are punished through the market, and I hope that this episode is over pretty quickly.
I hope so, too. I mentioned in the introduction, Bill, that I think this has been a pretty good week for President Trump. I thought he did fabulous at the UN. I thought that was a great speech. A lot of things that had to be said were said. And whether it's North Korea, Venezuela, and the fact that we're paying 22% of the dues at the UN and probably more, I think it was necessary to say that. I thought it was a great speech by President Trump at the UN, Bill.
Yes, it was. It was very untraditional. As somebody in the State Department said today, he's not a traditional president. And many people are jolted by the power of his rhetoric. It is not traditional. I think sometimes he goes too far and gets a little coarse. But and he's hovering now in the polls at about 42-43%, which isn't bad. It really isn't. I think the key point in his presidency now is he must get Congress to pass part of his program. He's got to have tax. He's not going to get health care reform. It appears today Ted Cruz pulled out of this new bill that they had proposed to replace Obamacare. I think that's pretty much gone for this session. But unless there's a miracle. But tax reform is looming. If the Republican Congress will not give him tax reform, there could be a political revolution in this country. I would not put it past Bush. I'm sorry, put it past Trump to form his own party. I think that may very well be coming.
Right. Well, and I think that if the revolution that you're talking about could very well come within the Republican Party, not that they're going to all of a sudden vote Democrat, but I think they're going to primary many of these candidates and go after some of the Democrats who are running in red states to make sure that more Republicans are elected. My biggest disappointment with health care is that this particular bill that they're looking at, which is primarily sending the money to the states, I know it's not complete repeal the way that it was promised in the campaign, but to do that you got to get 60 votes, as you know. But I think that it's a step in the right direction, and I'm really disappointed that Democrats in West Virginia, in Montana, in Indiana, in Missouri, in Dakota, North or South Dakota, whatever it is, I'm kind of disappointed that two or three of them have not said, you know, we're going to go along with this because we think this is actually good for our states. I mean, the Democrats are also being, I think, very irresponsible here, Bill. They don't want to play unless they take repeal off the table. But this is not repeal. They're not repealing Obamacare with this particular bill, Bill.
No, and you know, this is the same old story with the Democrats. Some of them come from states that are moderate, like Missouri or the Dakotas or Montana, and they play this game during the election campaign that, well, we're not part of the national party, you know. We are Missouri Democrats, and they go to Washington, and within 5 minutes, they're playing the national game party, and they vote right down the the line with the liberals. I wish the people of these states would notice that, but if they notice it, the question is, who's the alternative? I mean, the Republicans have become a party that really they don't seem to stand for anything. You know, they for 7 years they opposed Obamacare. And when they had an absolute chance to replace it, they couldn't do it. So I think that we may be seeing some new political parties over the horizon.
Well, that wouldn't disappoint me, frankly, because I think you're right. I think the Republicans have become extremely weird in how they're behaving. I thought Senator McCain in particular this week once again saying, well, I cannot support this because I want a bipartisan solution. Well, I don't know what planet he's in. There's not going to be. I mean, look, if there was a chance for a bipartisan solution with, I think, a dozen Democrats running in red states next year, it would have happened already. But obviously, for whatever reason, it's not happening. So I don't know. I'm very disappointed as well. I'm not going to turn around and vote Democrat, but I'm very disappointed with some of the Republicans in the Senate bill, particularly this lady in Alaska, who is all of a sudden, these people run. Yeah, but here's what bothers me, Bill. They run for office saying that they believe that Obamacare should be repealed. She did up in Alaska. John McCain did in Arizona. Ted Cruz, although Cruz, there may be some philosophical reasons with him, and I'm not sure he's exactly a no yet. I think he could be persuaded. But the lady up in Maine, Susan Collins, I think, yes. I'm not even sure she's a very conservative person anyway. I think she's a Republican by name only, as they say. But I'm disappointed because these people. John McCain, exactly. But John McCain is really the one who bothers me here because McCain was very clear that he wanted to repeal Obamacare, and he has to know that this is the best there is. There really isn't anything else other than just doing nothing and letting Obamacare implode. And it's already imploding, Bill. The governor of Arizona said their premiums are going up 100%. So, I mean, if that's not implosion, I don't know what is, Bill.
That's right. And you would think that the people of the state would have been in an uproar over Senator McCain's decision not to support it, not to support reform. They're going to be paying for this. And the Democrats can't wait to get back into power to impose other new taxes on the American people. Because they're worse than they ever were. I mean, Bernie Sanders is their leader. Bernie Sanders outlined his foreign policy a few days ago, and it was a foreign policy that would have made Joseph Stalin proud. These are people who really are becoming, in the Democratic Party, essentially socialists, and they're not apologizing for it anymore, and it's a pretty frightening thing.
You're right, and the only good news is that they're not headed toward winning elections, at least unless the Republicans continue to fumble, because there's a new article that came out in Time magazine about the Democrats. You probably saw this, where they say the Democrats are in shambles. And it's not that they're in shambles in the sense that they've lost a lot of elections for the legislature and all of that. They're in shambles because they don't seem to have any future. I mean, there's nothing in that party. There's nothing that they can say, okay, it's like a farm system. You know, we're developing some good players down at AA that should be up in the major league team in a couple of years. They don't have anything like that. All they have is the same people like Bernie Sanders or Senator Warren or the senator from New Jersey. They have a bunch of people. Or the senator from California. None of those people can win nationally. They'll win their 240 electoral votes because they represent big states, but that's about as far as they go, Bill.
Well, you know, I hope you're right about that because, first of all, we don't know who's going to run in 2020. I mean, and we don't know if Trump is going to run for re-election. He may not. He may get fed up. But the Democratic Party is a farce. It's a disgraceful farce. They are obsessed with race. That seems to be the only subject. They are obsessed with hatred of Trump that is deep and completely irrational. They don't actually contribute anything. And yes, as bad as the Republican Party is, I think the Democratic Party is worse.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this obsession with race, though, it's not winning them any more votes. I mean, it keeps the ones they have, but it doesn't expand their base, Bill. And that's their problem. They need to go back into some of these districts where they used to win.
That's
and
right.
They need to win those districts, and I don't see them doing anything that makes their chances better in 2020. Again, Trump is the, if Trump fumbles, then it's all bets are off, or if the Republicans fumble. But at least today, I would have to think that Trump has a pretty good chance of winning re-election. It won't be a landslide, but he'll probably do what he did the last time, Bill, because he'll put together the same kind of coalition that he put together.
Well, there will be every attempt to destroy him. I mean, there was not every attempt last time, by the way, when he ran last year, because no one thought he would win. Remember, on Election Day, he stood at 40% in the polls, and he pulled it out. There are a lot of Trump supporters out there who won't admit that they're Trump supporters, but on Election Day, they come out for him. It really, as you said, it depends on whether he stumbles. He's under such incessant attack, and he leads, he creates a lot of the problems himself. But it's going to be a fascinating 2 years in American politics. But what is so sad is to see both parties in the kind of shape they are. They really are both in terrible, terrible condition. And the Democratic Party, this was at one time called the party of Roosevelt, Truman, and Kennedy. Those guys couldn't get into the Democratic Party today. They really couldn't.
Right, and it seems to me that what a lot of people are frustrated with is the inability to get anything done.
That's right.
It seems like, people, if they were to get together, for example, if some Democrats were to say, okay, I'll sit down with Republicans and we'll talk about Obamacare because everybody knows it's not working. I mean, it's not a big secret anymore that it's not working. It's not working. But it seems like they both go to their own corner. It kind of reminds me a little bit of seventh grade dance, Catholic school seventh grade dance, where all the boys were on one side and all the girls were on the other, and they were kind of looking at each other, and it seemed like the boys were afraid of asking. I mean, it's really weird. That's what this reminds me of, all the Democrats on one side, all the Republicans on the other side, and nobody seems to want to take the first step. And the country is, I think, getting very tired of it. It's not so much ideology as it is the fact that they simply cannot get anything done. They cannot even agree. They couldn't even agree on what color carpet to have on the floor of the. I mean, it's really ridiculous, Bill.
Well, it is, and the polarization is complete. It has been coming for years, and Obama came to office pledging that he would be a healer, somebody who brought the country together. He was not. George W. Bush said he was a uniter, not a divider. But and he was. I mean, George Bush at least tried to have some semblance of civility in government, but the Democrats wouldn't allow it. I mean, the both parties are now hardened. But the Democrats blame the Republicans. It's really the fault of both parties. But I have to say that this hardening of politics primarily came from the political left. The right tends to be somewhat more flexible.
Well, there's crazies on both sides. But right now,
yes,
you're right. I would agree with you that right now the worst things are coming from the left. I really do.
Oh, yes.
And we're
we're
seeing it to some extent on going back to the NFL story. We're seeing that. I don't remember any NFL players protesting during the Obama years that, let's say right wing football players protesting that Obama, let's say, was writing too many executive orders or something like that. You know, it seems like there was none of that. I don't remember anybody at the Emmys saying that President Obama sent his kids to private schools and would not provide scholarships for young blacks in Washington, D.C. or whatever. I mean, none of those attacks were ever leveled at President Obama, but very mean things were said about President Trump, last Sunday, and one of the NBA, players, LeBron James, even called the president, I don't remember exactly what he called him, but it was not a
bum.
Nice word. Okay, yeah, that's not something you say about the president of the United States when you're somebody like LeBron James, who makes like $30 million a year and lives rather well, Bill.
He does, yeah. They can hold their next protest in his mansion, which could probably contain the entire NFL. I mean, it's quite farcical. It's almost a situation comedy. But let's see how it plays out. The political year has just begun. And this is already now the 2018 political season. I think it's going to be an absolutely brutal year in politics. I mean, I think the politics is going to get very, very rough. But I don't know if the Republicans can bring a case to the American people for re-election to control of Congress again. That will depend on them, on whether they can get things done. If they get two big things done, like tax reform and infrastructure, that create jobs, that bring money back to the people, I think they'll be in pretty good shape. But if they can't get anything done, they'll be in terrible shape.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. There's tremendous disappointment about the Republican Party itself. Bill, before we go on break, speaking of the left, I wanted you to share with us a very interesting post that you wrote today about a lady named Margaret Court, who I didn't know anything about this lady, but I understand she won several titles in her life, and apparently she said, I don't know, I'm assuming she's an older lady now, and she said something that she believes in traditional marriage, and she was attacked incredibly by some people. But there's a good example, Bill, of the left. You know, if you say that you believe in traditional marriage, you're immediately a homophobe and a bunch of other things, Bill.
That's exactly right. Now, this took place in Australia. Margaret Court is a great tennis champion. I think one of the greatest women tennis champions in history. She holds a number of records. She's one of the most famous people in Australia. And being expelled from her tennis club. I mean, my God, any tennis club in the world would love to have her. But she's being expelled because she is a pastor now, and is a believer in traditional values. And the head of the tennis club said, well, you know, she's created controversy. You believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, and this gets you expelled from a tennis club? I mean, it's reaching that level of absurdity. And it's not only, of course, in Australia. It is here in our college campuses, in our high school classrooms. Political correctness is, I think it was said by Mel Brooks this week, the comedian, comic writer. He said political correctness is destroying comedy. And he's right. We're going to become a grim, gray society. Political correctness is now everywhere. It has become a very, very severe problem. It shuts down debate. It stops thought. It destroys the morale. And it destroys accomplishment because you're judged not by your accomplishments, as Margaret Court should be judged by, but by her religious opinion. That's absurd.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing that it does, too, that I think Mel Brooks also said he would have never been able to make Blazing Saddles today.
That is correct.
Because that movie has a lot of humor that would not be acceptable today, and that's one of the funniest movies ever made. Blazing Saddle. That's absolutely hilarious, that movie. But I was going to say that this lady, Margaret Court, I didn't know anything about her until I read your article, but this is happening so much in our universities, like you say, and in many other places. These people, if you disagree with them, instead of saying, okay, well, I respectfully disagree with you, they immediately want to put you out of business. They want to call you a name.
That's right.
And I think this is not only making it difficult to do anything, but I think it's also making it very difficult to have conversations with people, because if you can, you know, if a person who believes in traditional marriage and a person who, let's say, believes that in freedom of marriage or whatever the word is, if those two people cannot drink a cup of coffee and talk respectfully about why they believe the way they do, then I don't think there's a big future for our civilization, Bill, because people should be able to disagree without, you know, without calling each other names. And I will tell you, the name calling these days is coming from the left. They're the ones doing the worst name calling. We have our people on our side, and I'm the first one to criticize them. A lot of it is coming from the other side, and they're being pretty mean, Bill.
Oh, it's a new McCarthyism. There's no question about it. This is what McCarthyism sounds like. Back in the early 50s, when old Joe was around, people were called commies, com-simps, which meant communist sympathizer, fellow travelers, all kinds of names, pinkos, all kinds of names. Today, you go on a college campus and you hear people chanting a sexist, racist, anti-gay, go away, and refusing to allow people who disagree with them to appear on college campuses. This is a repeat of the McCarthy era. The only thing they don't have is a single leader, as the McCarthyites had in McCarthy, who will guide them. But the basic mentality is the same.
Yeah. We're going to take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we'll do another segment, and we'll talk about Germany, where they had an election, and North Korea. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. One more segment with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, a couple of big stories, North Korea and, of course, Germany, where they had an election today. And as you indicated at Urgent Agenda, they're going to have to put together a government. I always find these parliamentary systems to be very confusing because
yes,
you win with 30% of the vote, I guess, which is pretty difficult to govern when you just get 30% of the vote. But I guess they got to put together some coalitions. But if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that a right-wing party did fairly well today in Germany, Bill.
It did. Germany uses a parliamentary system. It uses a proportional representation system, which is one of the worst forms of democracy. There are six major parties in Germany. There are two in the United States. The problem with proportional representation, as you said, is it's highly unlikely that any one party will get the 50% of the votes needed to organize a government. So what happens is you vote for a party, and you vote for it presumably because you believe in it, but nobody ever gets what they want, because even if that party wins, they've won with like 35% of the vote. They must then form a coalition with another party that you didn't vote for to actually have a government. It's a very, very bad system. It also gives tremendous power to small parties, disproportionate power, who really don't have that much support. There are a number of countries that use proportional representation. I don't think it really works out that well anywhere. The two-party system, with all its faults, gives people a clear choice, and whoever wins in a two-party race, unless there is a stray third party running, but usually one of the two candidates wins a clear victory, over 50%. And we also have a presidential system here where the presidency is elected as a separate entity from the parliament, which we call Congress, whereas in European countries, it is the parliament that gets elected, and you determine the head of state by how many votes you have in the parliament. Very confusing system, and one that that I don't think really satisfies anybody.
No, it's very hard to follow. It's very hard to follow, and I've always felt that the Electoral College is really what created the two-party system in the United States, because since you have to win states, you know, a little party that gets 10% of the vote really has no power in the United States. It's the contrary in Germany. They could be the coalition maker. But here,
well, yes,
it doesn't matter. Here you got to get your majority of the Electoral College, and if you like Ross Perot got 19% of the vote,
yes,
but
he did.
Just gave a great speech that night, and that's all he ever got out of the campaign bill.
That's right. Now, the party you referred to in Germany is the new right-wing party, which is an anti-immigration party, and they got 13.5% of the vote at last tally. That is a very, very large amount for a new party. There are people who consider it an extremist party. Some believe it to be a racist party. They deny it, of course. They will have over 80 seats in the parliament, and that's a lot of people talking. We will have to see how they behave. They will not be a part of the coalition government, and it's highly, highly unlikely that that would happen. But they are going to be a major force in German politics. And, of course, Germany has a history, which is a disturbing history, and it is believed by many people that this party developed its strength based on a somewhat bigoted view of immigration. Let's see if that's true, and let's see how far they go.
Yeah, we'll see that. And with North Korea, you know, back and forth all week between the two countries, I thought it was interesting. Bill Richardson, Governor Bill Richardson, who was in the UN, I believe, for President Clinton, was very concerned today about the rhetoric from President Trump.
Yes.
And it's like I'm saying, well, you guys did such a great job when you were in.
That's,
you know?
Right.
You did such a great job with North Korea. You're the people who need to be giving us advice, Bill Richardson. I mean, come on. I mean,
well, that's the politics of failure. You know,
you fail
upward. You fail upward. It's like Hollywood. You fail upward. You make a certain number of failing films. They give you another job at a higher salary, saying, well, he's had all this experience. You know, and these are the people who you see on CNN, the experienced people. They've had so many years of experience dealing with North Korea. Why, let's have Bill on the program, Bill Richardson. Well, the problem is the experience has been failing experience. And instead of saying, look, we failed at this, let's see what new policies can be formulated, they go right back to the old policies and they blame Trump for heating up the rhetoric.
You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the only thing the North Korea, the rhetoric from North Korea is that they want to hit an American city, and we're supposed to sit there and say, well, we don't want to make you angry. Well,
yes, that's right.
Come on. I mean, they're threatening to blow up an American city, and we're supposed to be nice to them? I mean, look, I don't always agree with everything that President Trump does. I think sometimes these tweets go overboard. I wouldn't have tweeted as much as he did. I mean, about North Korea, I think sometimes you have to let go of the issue, and President Trump doesn't seem to know when to let go. But I don't want to hear lectures about North Korea from people like Bill Richardson. I mean, I'm sorry. They had their time, and the mess we're in right now was partially created by them, Bill.
Oh, there's no question about it, and I would have to include in that the Bush 43 administration, which also kicked the can down the road. It was a constant process of kicking the can down the road once we learned that North Korea was developing nuclear weapons. And, of course, that can is much further down the road now. And we also know that North Korea supplies technology to Iran, and I would believe, would have to believe, vice versa. A very dangerous coalition. And, of course, we signed this ridiculous nuclear deal with Iran, which actually guarantees that Iran will have a nuclear weapon after a certain number of years. And you can be sure that that process will be helped along by North Korea and that the Iranians will help North Korea. So none of these problems were solved. And yet
no.
The people who failed, as you point out, come before us in television programs acting like these very responsible, sober diplomats. saying we must not panic in this situation. We must get back to the negotiating table. Why aren't we at the negotiating table? Why, we were at the negotiating table for 12 years. Would you like to see my expense accounts? You know?
Right. That's exactly right. Bill, as we look at next week, I guess Obamacare, quite a few things, North Korea, some of the things that we've talked about tonight. But one of the things I'm anxious to see is what happens with the NFL. I think that's something we'll know fairly quickly, Bill.
I think we will. Let's see how the ratings go. I would be very curious to see what the reaction is to tomorrow's Dallas game. It may be a quick story. It may disappear quickly. But we still remember, don't we, the Olympic athletes in 1968 who raised their fists at the Olympics in Mexico City. It's still very much a part of American legend. But I do think in the end, when something is turned into politics, when that's not why people go, is that you lose. You lose, just as the feature film industry has lost, just as others have lost, the Emmys lost. I think that it's just a losing proposition. As you pointed out, there should be on the part of these African-American protesters a new strategy that actually helps their people.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. We'll keep an eye on Urgent Agenda next week for your great analysis, and go back to kneeling. I think you need to go back to...
I hear another national anthem coming.
That's right.
Oh, the Zimbabwe national anthem is being played.
That's right. You need to kneel quite a bit tonight. I mean, it's just that's the new national pastime, I guess, kneeling.
Yeah, that's what we'll be doing. Yes, people used to do that in church. Isn't it amazing?
Well, we did it all the time in the Catholic Church. We thought it was a sign of being Catholic. We didn't realize we were making a political statement.
Oh well, I mean, the personal is political.
That's right.
I'm going back I'm going to watch a political drama on television that has nothing to do with politics. I will find the politics.
That's right. Have a great weekend, Bill. Great rest of the weekend, and we'll chat again soon.
Absolutely, next week.
Thank you very much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Always have a lot of fun with Bill on Sunday nights. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.